What's up, everybody? This is Emmanuel Joshua Turner. It's one half of the Bonded by Brotherhood podcast. My brother, Robert Turner, he said he's tired again. He's wanting some rest. So I told him to go ahead or whatever. Today, you know, we're having a voters registration event. I'm here with a great, great friend of mine. I call him the Kendrick Lamar of the South. His name is Lee Murky. He is a great, great all-around friend of mine and an advocate of ours here at the church. You know, again, me and my brother, we are active in ministry and several things that we do. But Lee, he's here with us today. We're going to talk about voting, taking advantage of your vote and your voice and using that vote and not being corny to vote and not being crazy and saying that my vote doesn't matter.
Right.
So, Lee, man, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Man, absolutely, man. You know what I mean? I'm going to let you have the floor and just kind of set the stage for people that say, man, why should I vote? Like, I don't feel like it matters.
Right.
Every time I voted in the past, I haven't seen anything change. I'm 35 and I've heard this. I've heard this from people that I've came up with.
Yeah.
And they say, man, I voted for this person. I did vote these 4 years. I voted here and I haven't seen anything change.
Right.
Why in the world are you telling me to vote now?
Right. Yeah. First of all, I'm a board member of Project Say Something, and like I'm here in that capacity for sure. But, you know, stepping into this work, this community work, that I've run into that a lot. Like, my vote doesn't matter, it never mattered, blah, blah, blah. And I think one of the fundamental issues is the fact that we have a problem with collectivism. We're taught to exist in society as individuals only, which is ironic because we're not actually taught to be individuals, but that's a different conversation. But this idea of collectivism means that we have to work and see ourselves as part of a community and do the work to get results as a community, right? So it's my vote didn't go the way I wanted it to go, therefore it doesn't matter. It's like, no, that's not what the community wanted, you know?
Mm.
And another fundamental issue is education. A lot of people don't know how the electoral process works. So they say things like, oh, the Electoral College. It's like, no, just look into what that system is. It doesn't mean that your vote is invalid. Also, if you look at a sample ballot, you see there's more on there than what the Electoral College can dictate. So, you know, the general election is going to do what it does on a national scale. We know Alabama is a red state for now, but that doesn't mean that you can't vote for Doug Jones.
Bingo.
You know what I mean? Doesn't mean that you can't vote for Rick Neighbors and Casey Eggleston and Elaine McCounier and all of these other people on the ballot. And you can look at these amendments that affect your immediate community right away. Like, there are so many things on the ballot that need local support. And to neglect that, to pull yourself out of it, means that once things don't go your way or you find yourself in a bad position, you can't blame society because you didn't participate.
That's beautiful. And one thing I want to add on to that is educate yourself, like Lee is talking about, on the process and what the title for is Casey Eggleston. The reason why I'm bringing him back up is because he's running for county commissioner. Me, I'm not ashamed to say I did not know what a county commissioner does.
Right.
And what does that mean for me or people that I'm trying to tell to go vote for you? I asked Casey. I was like, man, Casey, what is it that you're going to do?
Right.
Or what can you do? What authority that you have?
Right.
And he told me a litany of things. He said that he had a say or a voice into like the sheriff's department and things of that nature. That matters. So
yeah.
If I'm talking about not protesting police brutality, mm-hmm. I got the opportunity that will have somebody, a voice in the hiring process of that.
Yeah.
I probably need to vote for him, especially if he's somebody that has character, that's morals,
yeah.
and somebody I may know.
Right.
I need to vote for him. And then he was talking about the last county commissioner had a say-so, or he had a hand in distributing finance to a school to get new jerseys.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty dope.
Right.
Like, to me, I was like, man, that's cool. So if I'm somebody, I'm going to school and I care about where funds are coming to my school, I need to vote for somebody that feels like, it seems like to me, like from a personal standpoint, Casey cares about school because he's always been connected to education.
Always.
So it's just like learning candidates to say, I'm not asking you to learn where they grew up from and their entire background,
right.
but I want to have some knowledge about this candidate to where it's just like, man, once I put this pen to paper and I vote for this individual, it's not empty-minded. It's coming with, you know, it makes sense for me to vote for this person because they've shown that they cared about X, Y, and Z.
Right.
And one thing that I've told some people do, if you have a group of individuals, I always think about this. If I have a group of people and we make the topic of conversation at our kickback, mm-hmm. voting, mm-hmm. okay, like if we're going to kick back again in a couple of weeks, if you're the person that, hey man, when next time we come to the kickback, you're the reader or you're the right. writer or you're yeah. the person, mm-hmm. you could do the studying or whatever. Yeah. And you could bring us back the information and we can have dialogue about it.
Exactly.
Like it's several different ways. I feel like it's a lot of ways for us to do something with voting, opposed to using our creativity and our abilities to do something that could be more negative or could be something that could be destructive to the community. Mm-hmm. We could get very creative with that, but we need to use that same creativity to figure out ways to come up with something that we can do that can affect the vote and move the polls, like Lee is talking about.
Exactly. It's not going to change if we don't do anything. If you commit to inaction, then nothing's ever going to change. If all you're doing is complaining, nothing's ever going to change. And it's not saying that your complaints are not valid. They are. But you got to do something about it. And I think, you know, this it's important to bring up the history of the black vote as well. Like, you know, the Civil War ended, the Emancipation Proclamation happened in 1865, 2 years after that. 2 years after that, there were 2,000 black elected officials already. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? There were 125,000 registered black voters already. Mm-hmm. And that was because those Union troops were there to protect them from the violence in the South. And, you know, 10 years after that, President Grant moved those troops and told them to retreat, so the violence kicked right back up. Mm-hmm. And that number of registered voters knocked straight back down to like 5,000. So the difference was 120,000 black voters were discouraged to go to the polls. So my question to anyone who thinks your vote doesn't matter is why? Why lynch all of these people, kill all of these people, intimidate all of these people, put up all of these monuments if the voting was ineffective? Right? Like, that doesn't make any sense. And then you fast forward to, you know, Jim Crow, the literacy tests and poll taxes and grandfather clauses. Like, if voting didn't matter, that stuff wouldn't have been mandated. It wouldn't have been put in place, because that's a lot of paperwork. That's a lot of work for people to do to get laws passed and to put hurdles in place. Why risk civil unrest if voting is insignificant? Furthermore, people think about the most respectable black advocates like MLK, right? And honestly, they don't even think about him in his true form.
No. No. Look, I always say that, just, and I'm gonna let you keep on going where you're going. The I Have a Dream speech gets a lot of clout, well deserves clout. Mm-hmm. It gets well deserved recognition. But if you will study Martin Luther King, he had more than one speech.
Oh yeah.
He talked more than once.
Yeah.
And Martin Luther King said some very, very powerful things about black people. And even when he made the comment, which we all know about, as far as like, you telling the people to pull themselves up by the bootstraps, mm-hmm. but you gave them no boots.
Yep.
That's powerful all by itself.
1,000%.
You know what I mean? So it's just like, let's study Martin Luther King and understand that what he stood for. He didn't stand by it when he seen his people being beaten, mutilated. Like, he knew that it was going to take place.
Yep.
Now, he knew it was going to take place, and he knew it had a purpose, mm-hmm. but he still fought.
Yeah.
He still fought the way that he was meant to fight,
yeah.
and that was just using his voice, gathering people to go vote.
Yeah.
That's what the March of Selma was about,
yeah.
your right to vote. So if somebody was beaten, if I'm watching the video and I'm like, man, this is terrible, man, these dogs were let out on these people, these hoses was let out on these people,
mm-hmm.
and it's hard for me to say that that's true empathy,
right.
to where it's like, as soon as you watch that, be like, man, Martin Luther King marched. And then on November 3rd, you don't vote.
Right, yeah.
That's crazy. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't feel like we truly understand that. That's what was going on. I'm going to let you go ahead and continue, but I feel like we need to honor Martin Luther King the right way. And you honor him by voting.
Right.
You honor him by holding your brother accountable. Mm-hmm. That's what Martin Luther King did.
Right.
A lot of people don't understand that there was like a players kind of coalition with like, and I'm not knocking anybody, it was Jim Brown. All respect to Jim Brown, It was Bill Russell. It was a couple other guys. I want to make sure I'm historically accurate. But those are two that I know that was on it. But before the train of Martin Luther King really took off, they told him to stay in his lane.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It was just like, man, you're just a preacher. You know what I mean? Now, of course, they hopped on the cloud train when things got big. Mm-hmm. But the point that I'm making in that, let's just make, I don't want people to think of Martin Luther King as he was just some preacher, that he was somebody that wasn't aggressively fighting and moving the needle forward, because he very much so was. Just because he was educated, just because he was articulate, it doesn't mean that he didn't have a very powerful motive that was far more gangster than what we realize.
Exactly. And on that Martin Luther King point, people look at him like he was passive. Like, nonviolence is not passive.
No, it's not.
It's hard.
Yes.
Like, I've been in these protests. It's hard. Nonviolence is hard. But if you want to learn more about MLK, you should read The Radical Dr. King by Cornel West. That it puts everything in perspective. You can also read a paper Dr. King wrote. I think it's called Nonviolence and Social Change, where he says that, you know, property is not a person. A person is a person, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, he refused to condemn rioting. He said rioting is nothing to condemn, because if it was real violence, they wouldn't attack property. They would attack people. He was like, the punishment is the same, right? Mm-hmm. A white person is going to shoot you, whether you're burning the house down, knocking the fence over, or killing a child. So he was like, if they're only opting to take ownership of something from, you know, by looting or burning down an establishment, they're asserting temporary power and temporary dominance. But it's not because they're killers. It's not because they're bloodthirsty, because white people are curiously not dying in these demonstrations. Mm-hmm. So I think that's something super important to read. But to finish that point, I think, like, people think about, they associate the most respectable black advocates with voting, like, you know, Rosa Parks and MLK. But they fail to mention Malcolm X. Malcolm X was willing to kill for that right.
Absolutely.
He said it. He was like, ballot or the bullet? Which one do you want?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So,
absolutely.
And it don't get more radical than
that. It don't get no more radical than that.
At all.
And, you know, to shift gears but still stay on point, because we have a very, very, very broad audience. One thing that I don't like is people taking the easy way out.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that, just because Lee kind of triggered me when he said ballot or the bullet. It's very difficult, it's hard, and it's kind of non-existent in me to respect a man that will take the bullet to kill another black brother, but he won't position himself at a ballot box to vote for a brother like a Casey Eccleston that could change things in his neighborhood.
Right.
So it's just like, man, like, we have to start educating ourselves in the sense to where it's just like, man, and having a kind of a mirror moment to say, man, you know what am I doing to my community, or am I doing something to build my community? And building your community is a part of you voting. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think everybody's going to be Lee and be this person that's an advocate for Project Say Something that may not be as articulate as Lee. That may not be your skill set, but it doesn't mean that your skill set does not matter. Your skill set may be, I might be the guy on the playground that could just play basketball the best.
Mm-hmm.
And I could hoop. And a lot of times in our community, if you could hoop the best, you got the most clout.
Right.
And you could just use that ability and that gift to say, hey, man, on November the 3rd, man, let's all go ahead and vote.
Yeah.
And if you're not registered to vote, man, I got this website that I could go to. And I think you could just Google voter registration,
yep,
and the primary website will pop right on up. And yep, me and Lee have done a few today. I've done like six or seven. Lee has done a few himself. And it took us about, what, 6-7 minutes?
Yeah.
It takes no time. So it's just like, man, just put yourself in a position to where it's just like, I don't want to. I tell people all the time, like, if you start talking about changing the world, that's broad, and that's going to put yourself in a position to where it's just like, well, I'll just go get me some potato chips.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if I could just do what I can do,
right,
if I could go to the basketball court and I hoop, this is what I do, and tell somebody, hey, man, after we run 5-on-5, let's go out here and get on our phones and let's all register to vote.
Yeah.
That's what you could do.
Exactly.
You're not trying to change the world. You're just changing your world, your group, right in front of you.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, I think on that changing the world point, and for us to change our environment, we have to question it first. And to do that, you have to critically analyze your position in society. Paulo Freire talked about this idea called critical consciousness in Portugal. I think it's conscientious as al. But he said that, you know, you have to have consciousness. And what's one of the telltale signs of consciousness? It's self-recognition, right? You have to recognize that there is a self. So you can distinguish yourself from your environment. You can tell the difference between past and present. Like, there are so many distinguishing factors of a self-conscious human being, right? And it's not just human beings. Like, dolphins recognize themselves in a mirror. That's profound because, you know, you put a dog in front of a mirror, they think they're looking at another dog. You put almost any other animal in front of a mirror, they think they're looking at another animal. You put a baby in front of a mirror, they know that's them. And they're going to, like, instantly, it clicks for them. So once you recognize yourself in society, you can start to question what's around you because you can distinguish yourself from the background. If you're a speck of snow on a white canvas, nothing's ever going to be different. There's no depth there. But if you're a black speck on a white canvas, now the conversation can start. You see you're different from your environment, so you can question it. Now you can begin to change it because you recognize these different qualities in society that need to be changed. And what's hard about it is it's not sexy, right? There's nothing glorious about spending a whole day reading up on every candidate's platform to really learn what happened to the people of the past, like Fred Hampton, and what really happened to MLK and Malcolm X. That's not fun, but you have to do it. It's part of the humanization process and being a conscious being. So if I can implore you to do anything, is just start that process if you haven't already. Like, start reading and start questioning everything around you and do the hard work so you can start to change those things.
Beautiful. And that transitions to one of the other things I wanted to talk about, to question the things around you. If I'm from an environment, and, you know, me and Lee, of course, I've told you guys, of course, I'm a black man. Lee is a black man. So I'm going to shift the conversation more so to, you know, my tribe. I'll just say it like that.
Yeah.
And in our community, in a sector of our community, we want to make sure that, okay, if systemic racism and redlining have taken place, to create an environment for essential catastrophe and for PTSD.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? For like if it's been put in place specifically for that reason, like I talked about earlier, as far as like the black on black crime. Now, before I even go down here, there's white on white crime, there's every ethnicity, you're going to kill what you're around.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, far more so than black on black crime. Of course, we're going to keep up with those statistics. If I'm a major news network, I'm going to keep up with that statistic to paint the narrative that it's far more black people killing far more black people,
right,
when it's actually more white people killing more white people.
Right.
It's no way that we could kill each other more than whites kill whites because we're the minority.
Exactly.
So math excludes that.
Yeah.
But the point I'm making on that is we have to realize that, okay, no, I'm not going to kill my brother. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to be a part of that or be a part of that narrative. I want to change the narrative, and I'm not going to be a part of this plight to put an alcohol store, a liquor store on every corner, to put a gun store on every corner, drugs into the community. Because, again, you know, I don't know what hood that anybody may be from, but I don't know a lot of guys from that hood that own boats or poppy fields.
Right.
So if that being the truth, where are the drugs coming from?
Exactly.
That's another conversation.
Yeah.
So if we understand that these are the things that goes on in this redlined community that was built for these things to go on, let's make sure that we're not following rules that were implemented for us to be a project.
Exactly.
You know, they call them projects because this is a project. Step out of that project. And I'm saying out of that mindset. Don't let your mind be a project.
Right.
And say, my mind is something that it's a platform where thought can happen.
Right.
And I'm going to start thinking things to say, you know what? I'm not going to say forget the police, F the police. I'm going to say F the system that tries to teach me to say F the police.
Right.
Forget the system that tries to teach me it's not cool to be a district attorney, a judge, a lawyer. I'm going to put myself in position to where it's just like I can police myself. I'm going to be a real estate agent. I'm going to be a banker. I'm going to be a loan officer. I'm going I'm going to put myself in position to where it's just like, now I can start getting loans for my people.
Mm-hmm.
I can start policing my people.
Right.
To where it's just like, if the right people are in place, and the right, well, I ain't going to say that. But yes, I am. It's our platform. The black man that cares about his people. The black man that's married to his culture.
Right.
That not a black man that comes off and he resents his own skin.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Where it's just like, you know what I mean? I'm talking to the brother that loves his mother and father.
Right.
That views everybody as his brother. That's what I'm talking about. Man, love protecting, policing, educating, being a doctor, just being a physician for everything around you. And I think that that's what changed our culture, if we had the mindset and stop reaching for somebody to build something that they always wanted to be a project anyway.
Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, if you look at the history of the projects and the suburbs, it's all designed. It's all explicitly racist. There's a book called The Color of Law by Richard Rothstein, where he goes into the super racist history of public housing and how it was explicitly segregated and how white people were able to buy nice homes in the suburbs for $10,000, which I think translates to about $100,000 now, which is affordable for everyone at that time. But they shunned black people and kept us in the project. So it was a design. We were in the projects for a reason. It was intentional. I think another important thing to realize is that, you know, when you look at criminality in the hood, because, you know, we are 13% of the population and we do commit 50% of violent crime, which is crazy when you think about it, but it's a socioeconomic condition, right? It's not one thing. It's socio and economic, societal and economic. And if you look at the way these businesses are structured, you look at capitalism. I'll give an analogy. So you have Todd, right? Todd is a white man from the suburbs. He starts a business. Let's say his business is called McDonald's, and he puts it right next to an actual McDonald's. What's going to happen the next day? Somebody's going to shut him down, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to show up with police, shut that down. It's over. He learned a lesson. Happy ending. Nobody dies, right? Now you get Man in the hood, who's like, all right, I need to make some money. I'm going to set up a trap house. He sets up a trap house right next to a trap house. What's going to happen the next day? He gonna get cleaned out, right? Mm-hmm. They're gonna show up with guns and clean them out violently, because those cops cannot be called. Those cops are there to protect capital, not people.
Mm-hmm.
Capital. That's why they show up after the crime, right? It took the cops 3 hours to clear Columbine School, right? They're not there to protect people. They're there to protect capital, right?
Wow.
So the only difference between Tide and Man is law. That's it. They had the same idea, to make profit. No, one is not more ethical than the next. Because who knows what he's selling out of his trap house? Are you going to tell me with a straight face that marijuana is somehow more harmful than alcohol or a cheeseburger? Of course not. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So the only difference is law. And the law has been designed to keep us down. So, you know, to bring the whole point around is, as black men and women, we need to realize that, okay, this system is set up against us. We need to learn the rules and start playing chess with these people.
Absolutely. We have to start playing chess.
Yeah.
Because how we've been playing it, as far as like being stuck in that system, and let me pause right here. First and foremost, me or Lee, we're not knocking anyone that's in the projects, grew up in the projects.
No.
So like, we're not knocking that. Mm-hmm. We're more so talking about a mentality. We're even talking about the mentality that says you could take the me out the hood, but you can't take the hood out of me.
Right.
That man that gets the mansion that still has that hood project mentality, he'll be back. Mm-hmm. Before longer than he was out.
Yeah.
So this is a mentality that we're talking about. No police officer, no judge, no person that has embraced systemic racism cares if you continue to kill your brother,
mm-hmm.
sell dope, or do different things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I promise you that they've never cared.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even gonna go in that direction, but I tell people all the time, if you think that a system is worried about young black men selling drugs to other black people and messing up their lives, if you think it's about the drugs itself, I think you're nuts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You like, are insane.
You're insane. It more has finance and tax to go with that. And I ain't going down that road.
Right.
But the point that I'm making is you have to be knowledgeable enough to understand that what I need to do is just shift my mindset to where it's just like, I'm in the boardroom. I'm having the conversation. I'm connected to the room. Like me, what I do for a living, I can't say it on here, but me being in the room, me being able to sit down with other black men, like if Lee wanted to open a business, I would say, Lee, sit with me.
Right.
Like it's
right.
different things that I know that I could make his business happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I could set him up business account. Here's the loan that you need.
Right.
This is what you need to do. This is what you need to do. To where it's just like, if I'm just sitting out here chilling with Lee on the corner, well, we're not doing anything.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But now we got people like Forrest with me and what Lee is here to help me do today. Forrest, like get people registered to vote. He's a part of the Democratic Convention.
Yeah.
And this is what he's educating me on politics. I don't know a fifth of politics of what Lee knows. But Lee is going to educate me and he makes me more well-rounded. So when somebody comes in my office and I'm having that professional dialogue and having that little back and forth that we have, he's giving me bullets for my gun.
Right.
So it's just like, this is what we're talking about, like playing it a different way. That's what he means when he said play chess. Don't be a checkers piece for somebody else.
Yeah. Also, just because we mentioned drugs briefly, I think we should go into the war on drugs and how it's disproportionately affecting black people. I think, you know, one of the knee-jerk reactions when you start telling people what's racist in America, it's like, oh, come on, everything's not racist. Yeah, it actually is, right?
Yeah, I guess.
So the genesis of the war on drugs started with this man named Harold Anslinger. Now, Harold Anslinger joined the FBI at a pretty young age, and he joined around like in the 1930s, and he was so racist that even in the 1930s, his colleagues told him that he should resign. He put the word nigger in his police reports so often that they couldn't file his official paperwork without making edits, which is crazy for the 1930s, right? So around that same time, you get Billie Holiday, who comes up singing, and she sings a song called Strange Fruit about lynchings in the South. The thing is, the song is a hit. Everyone loves it. It's profound, you know? And, you know, Billie Holiday is just a hero anyway,
mm-hmm.
right? So she's going to all of these white clubs that she can't even go in the front door of, singing about black bodies swaying in the summer breeze, you know what I mean? Like, and that's super important. So Anslinger got wind of this, and he personally made a trip to tell her to stop. He was like, stop singing that song, or I'm going to ruin your life. So he did. And Billie Holiday was like, I don't care what you do, right? Like, I'm going to keep singing my song. The thing about it, Billie Holiday was also addicted to heroin.
Mm.
Because, I mean, her childhood was insane. Like, you know, she was raped at an early age. She moved in with her mom at a brothel and basically had to have sex for money as a minor.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, she had to cope with all that pain, and heroin was the best way for her to do that. And she said, like, I'm gonna do my drugs and I'm going to sing my song. So even when she couldn't get booked at clubs because Anslinger was shutting all of that down, he put some weird ID clauses in there. The same thing with, you know, poll taxes and all of that nonsense. She wouldn't let it derail her. She heroically stayed the course, kept singing that song. And then one day, when she got out of jail, she overdosed on heroin, got taken to the hospital and could have had her life saved. But essentially, Harold Anslinger and his thugs blocked off her room, blocked off any care, and she died slowly and painfully, killed by Harold Anslinger. And that's the genesis of the war on drugs. And how we know it's specific to race, if, you know, if his police reports weren't, you know, enough evidence, the star of the Wizard of Oz movie was also addicted to heroin. And Harold Anslinger went to her personally and said, why don't you take a vacation? You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't think you should be doing these drugs. Take a vacation. But he didn't ruin her career. He didn't ruin her life like he did Billie Holiday. He literally killed Billie Holiday in front of the whole world, and nobody did anything about it. But that's where the war on drugs started. And you can trace, like, Reefer Madness and all of that stuff back to him. So it's a crazy story, but that's where it all started, you know. And then don't even get me started on, you know, 1970s, right after the Civil Rights Movement. Magically, all of this cocaine is in the hood.
Absolutely.
Then suddenly, you know, that cocaine turns into a cheaper product, crack, and it's somehow double the amount of years you can get for cocaine because white people were doing cocaine, black people were smoking crack. So it's like, same drug, same high, same everything. One is cheaper than the other. One is in the hood, one's not. One to get you 10 years in prison. Like, it's crazy. So the whole system is set up against us. So we need to start holding all of our celebrities accountable. Like, hey, you can't keep pushing this narrative on us, you know?
Absolutely. And that's the thing for us. Like, and me and Lee, you know what I mean? I'm a professional man. He's very professional. We're both professionals. But we're both hip hop heads. Yes, you know sir. What I mean? Like, yes, of course, if we was to rap right now, I would demolish Lee. But that's a lot. That's a lot. But Lee is a ridiculous, great MC. But the thing is, like, as far as me, like, I told him off record before, I was like, I love Gucci Mane. You know, I love Gucci mm-hmm. Mane. But, and I think that it's nothing wrong with having balance. Like, I can love Gucci Mane, but understand that your Nas, your Kendrick Lamar, even one of my favorite albums, the Jay-Z 444 album, is needed. Like, that's needed to listen to and take that in bit by bit. That's not a one-time listen to. You need to sit with certain albums so you can just kind of take in what these brothers are saying. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, man, like J. Cole's, and the list goes on and on. So we could just say, okay, man, these people are telling me a different way. Right. You know what I mean? And this is the heartbeat, and the fastest way to get to the street is mm-hmm. music. So it's just like, these guys, like, we both know Jay-Z don't have to do another song in his life. Ever. So he's specifically doing music now because I want to get information to my brothers. Yep. So that's free game. Like, if you say, man, Jay-Z put me on, he is. Right. He's doing it in the form of music. Like, mm-hmm. he's giving you jewels that you can just like, man, you know, I'm going to implement these things into my life. So our thing is saying vote. And it's also saying, man, I want to take my power back. Yeah. I am not going to just deliberately, and not even deliberately, even subconsciously mm-hmm. give power away. Right. Like, I'm tired of, and it really rubs me the wrong way when it comes to, like, policing and the legal system and just everything that we call it corny. Are we saying, like, man, that's whack, man, that police officer is whack.
Right.
But the thing is, like, I don't want my house broken either.
Right, exactly.
Like, I know dudes that are gangsters. That's called, well, they call themselves gangsters. You know, I'm not even good.
Yeah,
I don't know any gangsters. I take that back.
Yeah.
But I know people that claim to be tough, but if the wrong thing goes down, they call the police.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like, man, no, like, if you understand that at the end of the day in your real life, if somebody's to break into your house, you got a job, you're working hard, or you're doing everything you do to build for your family and own that piece of land that you own, mm-hmm. and somebody sabotages that, you call the police and you want them to come. Well, why don't you have somebody that's positioned in your family, a cousin, somebody that's already there, that's actually going to care, not just going to come out there and just put pen to paper and throw it in some police report that he'd never look at again.
Right.
You want somebody that actually really cares. Going back to the analogy I said about Lee, the reason why I'm going to put a little bit more sweat equity into, let's say if I was giving a loan to Lee, I'm really going to really try everything I can. Now, is there systemic racism
mm-hmm.
In the environment that I could possibly work in that's still set up, you know what I mean, for against Lee? Absolutely. You know what I mean? And that's a topic for a whole nother day.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? When we talk about people like Kamala Harris and we say, well, she did this, that, and the third.
Yeah.
Well, if you work in a system that's been set up, like, it's only so much that you can actually do to where eventually that system itself, whether I'm the head of it or not, is still going to rear its ugly head.
Mm-hmm.
And people are still going to be affected by the system.
Yeah.
And then you get to say, well, this person, the system did that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? But
yeah.
But let's stop giving away power. That's my main point on that.
100%. And even like our local situation with this Confederate monument, you know, we've been protesting out there for like 3 months now. And like every day, pretty much. And if we had some black people on that commission, it would have been down already.
Bingo.
You know what I mean? Like, absolutely. It would have been down.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the only thing that I feel like, going back to Martin Luther King, I wouldn't be surprised if he was upset that we were still marching.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, my mind frame is, I march so you guys can be on the commission.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's I could see him thinking like that. Like,
mm-hmm.
I'm thinking that you guys are going to take these doorways and the opportunity and the laws that were changed to position yourself, to get educated, mm-hmm. to be on these seats, not freely giving up seats.
Right.
Yeah. Like, George Floyd should never have his knee on his neck. He mm-hmm. should have a balance of black brothers that's there that he goes, hey, bro, you need to get up off this man.
Yeah.
He need people there, like, for him to hold that, because I can't see if a man is racist or not, in a sense. It's hard to build law around racism.
Right.
But I could position myself next to racism
mm-hmm.
as a black man and say, bro, you need to get up.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to report you myself.
Right. Yeah.
I guarantee you he gets his knee off of his neck. To where it's just like 100% where he has other brothers around, I'm not going to be comfortable.
Right.
But when I got rookies around me and people that's just not connected to this person in no shape, form, or fashion, that doesn't look at him as a brother, I'm going to let something go on.
Right.
Because it's just like when you have that mentality of the three-fifths of a man, I don't look at this person subconsciously as 100% human anyway.
Exactly.
I don't look at him as a man because a lot of people say, like, how could they look at this person dying? Well, if it's an embedded racism in me, I don't look at him that way.
Right.
I look at him as property because we've already put him in a project anyway.
Yep.
So everything that's been instituted and how I view this individual is something that's just like a caricature in a sense. Yeah. Where it's just like we have to demolish that. We demolish that by putting ourselves in position of power.
Yeah.
Putting ourselves in position to where we start changing certain things to where it's just like we're there to police the police by being a police officer.
Right. And plus, you know, policing is just fundamentally flawed. Like armed policing does not mandate that you need to even be in the county that you're policing. Like, think about that. Like, you have a gun and basically the right to kill with impunity inside of a community that you know nothing about. You don't know these people. You don't know their names. You don't know their culture. You don't know their experiences. And you have a weapon in every interaction that you have with these people. That's insane beyond words to me. And also, your training doesn't require you to deal with different situations like someone ODing on drugs. What you gonna do? You gonna shoot the heroin out of them, right? Like, you're not trained, you're not equipped for that. So if someone like George Floyd is you know, tripping out as they said he was, that is not what I got from the video at all. But if that's the case, then you need to have the training necessary to deal with that peacefully. How is it helpful to restrain him physically and put a knee on his neck? Like, that's not helping anybody. That's making the situation worse for everyone involved, right? Because one thing we know about racism is that it's rooted in dehumanization.
Like, that's the thing.
They needed to do that. Like, slavery came first, and then they needed to reverse engineer their own ideology to insert bigotry into it to justify having these men and women in chains. They needed to say, okay, we're going to treat them like cattle, but they're people, so we need to treat them like people. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's what you do if you're looking at a person. Mm-hmm. So they dehumanized them on the way here. Like, nope, you're not a person. You're dark, you're less than human, so I'm going to treat you like cattle. So that's what racism is. It's born out of that impulse and that need to treat
us like animals. It's born out of that impulse and that need, and then for someone to ask that impulse and need to have empathy for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I
can't
tell
people,
I can't do it. And then what I can't do is when we're talking about, just since we talk about policing, I can't put my system on trial.
Right.
See, a police officer is an activity of the system.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't, if I say that these police officers is wrong, I'm saying my system is wrong.
Yeah.
That's why a lot of police officers get off. And that's what I'm saying is we need to infiltrate the system to where it's just like, okay, now if I infiltrate the system, now I'm making it harder.
Right.
Because now I'm a part of the system to where it's just like, man, okay, well, it's hard for, if Lee is right there as an upstanding officer and you say, hey, get off his neck.
Yeah.
Get up. He has to get up.
Right. He has to. I'm going to shoot him.
He has to get up. Because, but the thing about that, Lee, at least I'm going to shoot him. It creates a whole nother thing when the system is battling against itself.
Yep.
Now that's what anything that battles against itself has to what? Fall.
Yep.
So that's the only way that we can do this thing. Like, man, I want to go in the inside of it. They send undercover agents in the inside of street things all the time.
All the time.
So it's just like, so all we're saying is like, I'm just send some agents on the inside of this system and not say forget it. I'm going to say, no, let's get with it. Let's make sure we're with it and we can change different things in our community. So I guess in this, hopefully, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In this podcast, to just put a bow on it, we want you to vote and not give up power. I'll let Lee close it out, but my final statement is that it's just be serious about power. Be serious about making sure that I'm going out to vote and being educated on the people that's on the ballot and how it affects me. Me personally speaking for me, I haven't found a politician that I can say, oh, I so agree with. and this person is just so great and this, that. No, I don't. I think that you just, like, to borrow from my heard, a one man say that you're trying to pick the less of two evils. You know, that's all you're trying to do.
Yeah.
It's not that I don't buy into anything. I'm just saying what will most benefit the people.
Right.
And these positions are set in place. I want to make sure I have a voice on it.
Right.
I don't want to be so blind to truth to where it's just like, well, I just think it's going to be what it's going to be.
Right.
Going back to what Lee said, nobody's going to try to take anything from you unless it has value.
Exactly. Yeah, and just to close out, you know, on the lesser of two evils point, you know, if one candidate is a Category 5 hurricane and the other one is Category 2, hurricanes are bad regardless, right? But if you had to pick, you're going to pick that Category 2 because then your house doesn't get blown down and, you know, your house doesn't flood or whatever. So pick the Category 2 and just vote, you know.
Bingo. Bingo. That's it. You guys be good. It's been good talking to you guys. Go vote and stop giving up power. Educate yourself. Love your brother, man, because at the end of the day, you need him. Y'all be good.